to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. In a world where the focus on self-care and wellness is ever-increasing, there are products of all shapes and sizes popping up to capitalise on a consumer market that is very quickly expanding. One such product is that of non-alcoholic craft beer. And I'm not talking about that watery crap that Carlton or Heineken serve up, or the Holsten ones that you can buy in the supermarket. I'm talking about full-flavoured, full-bodied beer that is hard to distinguish from its higher ABV cousins. Joining me today is Paul Perner, one half of the co-founding duo of Hairless Dog Brewing Company in Minneapolis, Minnesota, America's first exclusively 0.0 non-alcoholic brewery. I've been seeing a lot of discussion about non-alcoholic beer on the socials of late, so I thought it would be really great to invite him on and have a bit of a chat about this whole new segment. So welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Paul.
Thank you very much, Chris. I'm honored to be here and honored to talk to your audience.
All the way from Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's great to have you on today. Thanks for joining me. You know, mate, this whole thing about, you know, alcohol-free beer, zero alcohol, non-alcoholic, however we might term it, is really starting to become popular. I know definitely out here in Australia, and usually we're a little bit behind the States in terms of how these trends happen. How big is it in the USA right now?
It is big, and it is getting much larger this last dry January, which, you know, if that's a thing over there, over here, it really kind of blew up this year. And we've seen a lot of the more major players come in and, you know, beyond just Heineken and Budweiser, and a lot of the domestic kind of traditional craft houses have started rolling out their, you know, their non-alcoholic products. And so it's heating up, and it's really good for all of us because the quality is shooting up and the technology is getting better. And so we have access to more methodologies, which is really great.
Yeah. We'll touch on those a bit later actually, because I know there's been a lot of discussion in those social media posts I've sort of been referred to in the opener around how's this done? What's the difference between the different methods? So I'm really keen to hear about yours, but let's go back to the start a little bit. So you started the company with your co-founder, Jeff Hollander. How did you guys come to this decision to start a non-alcoholic brewery?
Sure. Well, Jeff and I were long-term friends, and he used to live across the street from us. And then we had kids and kind of went our separate ways. And in that period, he and I both, we quit drinking. We had hit our 40s. We had our kids. And, you know, we don't have any sob stories or anything like that. We had just had enough for everybody. And and decided independently that, you know, this is something we were going to look into and do. And then we ended up running into each other at a holiday party and noticed that we were the only two in the room without drinks in our hands. And kind of went, oh, hey, so that's sticks out a little bit, doesn't it? And so we had a conversation, and the next day we got together for coffee. And one of the themes that really kept coming up for us was that exactly in those situations, in these celebratory celebrations where you're around your friends, there just weren't any good high quality products for people like us who just didn't want to drink, but still enjoyed going out and being part of the social scene.
Yep.
And so you know, they didn't taste very good. And quite frankly, if you walked into a room with a, you know, an O'Doul's in your hand, people kind of look at you and go, ooh, what happened to you? And right. And so we decided that we wanted to make a product that people could be proud to drink for what it was instead of what it wasn't. And one of our early, you know, bylines was, you know, party like there's a tomorrow. And we want to bring more people to more parties and have those parties last longer and make better connections.
That's actually a pretty cool way of looking at it.
Right. We don't want to exclude anybody. We're not saying, you know, don't drink alcohol. Don't do all of this, because alcohol is so ingrained into so much of who we are as humans. You know, the sociality of the public house and all of that stuff is so important to who we are. And a lot of times for people who stop drinking for whatever reason, they kind of get cut off from that part of their humanity too. And we wanted to have a product that allowed them to, you know, not be punished for making a good choice in their life. And so we struck out to make a craft beer product that was different from anything that was out there. And that's what we've done with our, you know, we're all 0.0%, as you said, and we are different from anything that's out there.
So what about your backgrounds? Were either of you, you know, homebrewers in the past or?
I had been homebrewing for 20 years and had been making my own wine. And I come from one of my old family friends from when I was growing up. They own a vineyard around here, and a vineyard in Minnesota is something hard to, you know, with a 90-day growing season, it was a miracle. And so I spent a lot of time out at their vineyard and just kind of had this fascination with how that worked. And then I was a writer, and I ended up being a food and wine writer for a while, and that got me more interested in the business of it. And then one thing led to another, and here I am. My partner, Jeff, comes from a business background. He is also our marketing director and our chief creative officer. And he's more of the business guy, and I'm more of the, I hang out in the brewery.
Nice. So let's talk about the driving factors for this. I'm going to call it a trend, but, you know, it's sort of seeming like it's becoming more than a trend. It's becoming really socially acceptable to have these zero alcohol beers. What are the driving factors? Is it this whole thing we've seen in recent years around, you know, mental health and self-care and wellness? Is that really pushing it? Or is it as the way you guys have sort of come to this, you just sort of, I got sick of drinking. What is it?
I think it's a combination of those two. And then the third one I would say probably is just more people have gotten interested in it. And so therefore the quality has gotten better and it's something that you would want to drink. You know, here in America, non-alcoholic beer started because of prohibition. The big brewers said you can't put all of our people out of work. And so they came up with this definition of non-alcoholic being 0.5% because that's the lowest ABV they could get. You know, meanwhile, in other parts of the world, you know, like Spain and all over Europe, they've been making non-alcoholic beer for a couple hundred years. And theirs is actually really, really good. And the culture is different where I was in Spain before the whole COVID lockdown. And, you know, it was just delightful to be in a bar and have two different non-alcoholic beers on tap. And, you know, it was a very different experience. And so, but I do think that the health craze that you point to there, which has been going on, you know, here since the 70s, probably is the biggest factor. Yep. You know, we see early on, we were seeing a lot of, I think probably one of the more interesting factors for me was the internet and social media and how that was playing out in the lives of millennials and them realizing that their social media feed was also their resume. And, you know, if they had a social media feed full of being bombed photos, you know, it was affecting other areas of their lives. And we were hearing from consumers at that point that that was one of the reasons they were drinking less, which was fascinating.
Just a quickie to let you know how you can help spread the stories of the great people that I talk to on the show. It's all about the socials. If you like an episode, you can share my announcement of it on Instagram to your story or to your Facebook feed, or even just leave a thumbs up emoji comment or maybe tag a friend. It all helps. And of course, it's all about the Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, rate, and review. It's the gold standard for helping people to discover the show. Leave a review and I'll post it on my Instagram feed. Thanks very much for your support. So what about the big brewers? You know, we've mentioned Budweiser and Heineken, Carlton out this way. You know, they produce some pretty bland non-alcoholic beers. You know, are they really hurting with you with what you're trying to achieve with it? You know, these full flavored variants? Because, you know, in my experience, mostly that's what I've tried in terms of, you know, non-alcoholic beers, which I think are sort of in that range of 0 to 0.5 that you're talking about. Because I've got to be honest, I'd much rather drink, say, a Coke, Diet Coke, whatever, or a lemonade instead of one of their bland beers. Is that hurting you? You've got to overcome that initially before people can start to experience your world of 0.0 beers?
It's kind of a double-edged sword in that, you know, companies like, you know, Heineken and Budweiser, like you're saying, they have a lot of money to pour into marketing. And so they cut down a lot of tall grass for companies like us, you know, to convince people that, you know, NA beer is a desirable thing. But yes, that reputation for poor quality, and I don't want to say poor quality because
obviously the quality control
things. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the traditional American NA beer, as I was saying, you know, it was a real mark on you. And so they didn't put any research and development into it. And so the products just weren't that good. And people didn't want to, you know, nobody talked about it because it was kind of the shadow.
You don't get
product.
Excited about them, do you?
Yeah. And yeah. That's really changed now that there's more and more people coming into it. And you know, the craft NA beer scene here actually is vitalizing fast. And there, it used to be 2-3 years ago, there was probably about, you know, 4 or 5 of us. And I want to say just after this dry January, there's probably 30 or 40 major players in the market now.
Oh, wow. So how do the conversations go when you're trying to combat that thought of the consumers where those people might think that, you know, I'd much rather drink a Coke or a soft drink or a juice or a sports drink or something like that, as opposed to these non-alcoholic beers? What are you sort of spreading as your message there?
Well, as my partner very eloquently says, you know, you haven't lived until you've ordered a Diet Coke with your truffle dinner at a fancy restaurant. There is a role for all of these things in our lives, you know, and people want those experiences. And I think, again, this, you know, I keep harping on this point. It just keeps going back to the quality of the products that people like us can offer. That I think will make it more of a normal thing, you know. And I just think for so long it has just not been a normal thing for anybody.
Do you think it's important for you to be advertising your beers as 0.0%? I mean, is it the fact that you're just trying to make people understand that not all non-alcoholic beers are created equally?
Primarily, yeah. Our 0.0% designation is very different from a lot of the other ones because we are a craft brewery, and the beer flavors that we fell in love with are these big, full bodied, you know, head retention, like you're saying, you know, not those kind of de-alcoholized beers that are, you know, regular beers, and then they remove all the alcohol, and when you take the alcohol out, all the other molecules the same size also go away, right?
Yeah,
and so. What we do is we don't remove any alcohol, so we never create it in the first place. And so that allows us to leave that big full-bodied experience in there and that head retention and all of that stuff. And so for us, it is a differentiator in the product that we offer. There is a significant part of the customer base for whom that is very important, whether, you know, it's a pregnant woman who just can have zero alcohol, her doctor has told her, or, you know, someone in recovery who has that kind of, you know, trigger reaction, or, you know, for religious reasons, you can't have any alcohol at all.
Yep.
And, you know, in those beers that are 0.5%, that is alcohol. And so, that's why we do make a big difference out of it. It's a very different product from top to bottom. And we do think that it allows us to achieve a more craft beer like result.
Talking about alcohol percentages, I've heard rumors of, commercially available kombucha that's meant to be alcohol free has actually registered, you know, anything as high as 3 or 4%. I don't think they're actually held to the same testing standards as a brewery, but you could get into a lot of trouble if you were advertising 0.0 and it sort of came up as a 1 or a 2, couldn't you?
Sure could. Yes, you could. Yep. Yeah, it is. You know, it's interesting what you say, though. There are a lot of, you know, labeling things are a big issue, and there are different government, you know, of course, organizations that take care of all of that stuff. But one of the more interesting stories about, you know, kind of the craft beer scene over here, and I don't know if this is true where you are, but if you say you're making a fruit beer, that means that it's more or less a smoothie. You know, it's a can of fruit juice with, you know, alcohol in it. And yep. Those things ferment in the can sometimes and they blow up.
Yes, we've had that. Yeah.
Right. And immediately, you know, what you hear from people is like, so what? What's next? It's a fascinating thing, the amount of adventurousness that people have right now, in, you know, across craft beer.
Yeah, I've been told that even some orange juices that are, you know, getting close to their best before date can, you know, start to ferment and develop a level of alcohol in them too. I had no idea.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's surprising, you know, alcohol that's in consumer products that you just don't think of. You know, I guess anything that essentially ferments like a slice of bread does in fact have a little bit of alcohol in it. So,
oh, there you go.
Right.
Well, unlike any of the other breweries, you are choosing to be 100% completely alcohol free. So can we get into a bit of the details around your brew process? Because I know there are a lot of listeners that are really keen to understand the art of brewing non-alcoholic beers as opposed to these 0.5% beers, which are made a little bit differently. And I think it's a little bit more complex than people might realize. So can you sort of explain your process a bit?
Sure, a little bit. There are, you know, there's trade secrets around it that my partner will absolutely kick me in the teeth if I give too much up, right? Exactly. But, you know, like I say, we don't introduce alcohol in the first place. And that comes down to fermentation. So we don't ferment. We don't use yeast. And the brewing process for a standard brewer is all about preparing for that yeast interaction. And so the process that they use to create sugars, you know, the conversion of the plant starch into sugars and all the other things that the yeast is then going to eat and turn into alcohol and CO2, the carbonation.
Yep.
We do that first step very, very differently in terms of what goes in. That's also the case for other people that do use yeasts that, you know, do fermented, you know, I'm sorry, arrested fermentation and other such things. They create specific sugars that then that yeast will eat and then die before it's, you know, goes all the way up to 5% or something like that. It dies at 0.3.
Yep.
And so for us, it's a matter of kind of manipulating the input, and then really kind of deconstructing it and thinking about the end product more, as the experience, the flavors and the aromas and all that stuff, and realizing how we're going to create those on the back end without the fermentation.
Oh, that's interesting. So are there purists out there that are challenging your interpretation of what is and isn't beer? Because, I mean, you mentioned that there's no fermentation there. So you know, obviously that takes the CO2 and the alcohol out of the equation, but you obviously got to put back in the bubbles at a bit later date. Are people saying, oh, this is just pretty much wort or thereabouts?
We haven't heard that yet. It's a discussion that we have had and amongst my friends who are beer purists, I've absolutely had that question and talked to them about Reinheitsgebot and all that other fun stuff.
But,
ultimately the role that Hairless Dog is designed to take in your life is what a beer performs in your life. And so what a beer is to you is a beer. And so that's how we kind of approach it. We're just kind of here to bring that kind of joy back into people's lives.
Because I've seen the beers, on Instagram, whatever, the videos and the pictures, and it looks completely like a beer. You've got your head. Are you getting head lacing down the side of the glass and all that sort of thing with your beers?
Yes. Yes, we are. Yeah, we are. And that, again, that's because we have a higher gravity and more beer body in there to hold on to all of that stuff, and we don't have to put any additives in there to kind of hold on to those smaller bubbles and things like that.
That's pretty awesome. How long did it take you to hone your recipes and your method for this thing?
It probably took about a year and a half to 2 years of me tinkering around in my garage with the recipes that I'd built up over homebrewing over the years, and just kind of figuring out what worked and what didn't. We've spent our history up to that, to this point, kind of working on that same definition of beers that we've been building on, and that reputation of ourselves as a traditional beer maker, and using that method. And we are really excited about what's coming up here in this next year as we're refining our method and we are modernizing the equipment that we're working on. And we have also brought in a director of research and development named Wes Kostelski, who is I'm just a huge fan of his, and he is refining what we started. And this year we're looking at really kind of pushing the boundaries of what we've been able to do. And we've come up with a new methodology that we think produces an even more, beer-like NA beer that pushes that limit a little bit closer, retaining the body and the head and all of that big aroma and everything, but just trending even more and more like a beer experience.
So do you actually need specialized equipment to do this? You can't just, have your average everyday brew kit produce these beers? Are there bits and pieces that you need to tack on to that?
For our method, no, we don't. We can produce ours pretty much anywhere. But that is not the case for most other NA beers. Yeah, there's a lot of very specialized equipment that goes into those processes. Yep. Yeah.
And so how did you guys get your start? Did you have your own homebrew kit that you sort of were bumping up, and then you were doing contract brewing, or did you go straight in with stainless steel from the very start?
Sure. No, it was my homebrewing equipment in the garage for the first while. And then we were, we got some support from an agricultural organization here because, you know, we use grains and other such things. We count it as agriculture. And so they helped us find a real small brewery out in the middle of nowhere here that was willing. They were up for anything. And so we tried a whole bunch more things at a larger scale. And, you know, some bottles blew up in the storage room. And we were like, okay, don't sell that one. And that way we were able to trial and error. And now we've kind of moved up to a larger facility, and we are now onto our third kind of facility, and we'll then expand from there across the nation now. That's our growth plan, at least over the next couple of years.
So it's still sort of like a contract brewing relationship. You don't have your own home base. Okay. Are there the plans at some stage?
We have a lab.
You have a lab. Okay. So what about at some stage, like we're talking before about, walking into a party with the old zero beers and people looking at you funny, and you want to create this sort of, environment where you can have this great times at parties and whatever. What about the whole idea of having your own tap room? Do you think that's going to work for you? Or do you feel like the consumers that you're dealing with aren't necessarily interested in that going to the brewery experience and, getting a little bit buzzed, that sort of thing? Is there something different for your consumers, do you think?
That is a great question. We have been, we've been turning that over and over in our heads. And actually when we started in 2017, it was really difficult to get a bar owner to think about putting an NA beer on tap, giving up tap space to an NA beer.
Absolutely.
Right. And that is changing fast. I mean, now we have people coming to us asking if we'll, if we'll produce in kegs and get them out to them. And so, that is very different. And I think that is because there are more people who, again, desire NA products in these social spaces, and they realize the market opportunity. And so we would love to have a brew pub. I think it would be fantastic. It would not only allow us to do a lot more fun stuff and try new stuff, but it could be a destination. We do get a lot of phone calls and we get a lot of emails asking us, and we've actually had people just kind of show up at the front door and go, we're looking to have a beer. So I think the market would absolutely be there. But like you say, it would be a little bit different, but it would be really fun to create a space that everybody felt welcome in and didn't feel like, they were kind of on the outside.
Yeah, I sort of think about what type of consumers would you be. I think you'd have the real healthy people wanting to perhaps be there, all the way through to family groups, and what you were saying before about, being inclusive in that way. So, maybe it's some sort of hybrid family, like, I don't know whether, America, you have the restaurants that have got the kids' play gyms all attached to it. I'm thinking along the lines of that, where you've got the parents can go in there and there's the play gyms for the kids, and just making this real inclusive thing where nobody's there to get drunk, if you like. They're there to have a great time. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing because, you talk to a lot of guys and girls that want to go to the pub. I want to have a beer at the pub and I want to enjoy myself and relax and that sort of thing. And you've taken away a little bit of that, I suppose, in terms of the non-alc. And so what do you replace that with to get people to love it as much? Because people get quite passionate about going to their pubs for beers, don't they? Or their breweries?
They do, exactly. Yeah. I live in Minneapolis is a place that has had this, we had a craft brewery revolution probably about 20 years ago. And you're never more than, 2-3 miles away from a really good, local IPA around here. I like what you're saying there. I think that's a great idea. You could really get a great destination place going on where everybody was there. But Wes, my director of R&D that I was talking about earlier, is a trained chef, and he scratches at it every other week to say, boy, I sure would be great to make this kind of food there.
So look, we've gone through all this 20 odd minutes. We haven't even talked about the beers that you've got out in the market right now. Tell us about the beers, how they started off and what you've got out there in the market currently.
Sure. So right now we've got three kind of, fence posts in our offerings. And then we've got one seasonal, our coffee stout, which has just kind of gone away for the season. And that was a big traditional kind of coffee stout with a lot of pine notes to it and a very, a strong espresso kind of flavor to it, but we'll bring that back next winter. And then in the market right now is our IPA, which is our top seller. And that's it's a very standard kind of, I shouldn't say standard, but a traditional American IPA with a lot of, again, the pine flavors and the Amarillo hops and all of those things, and just a ton of hops to it. All of these are very big flavored beers with a lot of big old flavor to them. And then we have our Citra Lager, which is a lager based, you know, grain bill that has a little bit more of an elevated hop flavor and then a touch of calamansi to it, which, you know, I don't know if you over here, everybody looks at you and goes, what's a calamansi? And then it's also called a Filipino lime. It's got this really wonderful kind of, nice. you know, all encompassing citrus thing to it without being, nice. You know, juicy.
Is that the beer that actually started off to be something else? And then you realize, can you tell the story about that? Yeah.
Sure. Actually, this was back at our first brewery where we had the bottles blowing up when we were trying all sorts of crazy stuff. This was going to be our, it was going to be kind of our summer super light lager. And through a series of miscalculations on, it's a hilarious story that I can't share the whole thing of it is, but at any rate, it came out in the bottle. We got it all capped up and bottled. And, you know, this is one of those situations where we learned that our beer has a little bit different character than a lot of them. And that you got to kind of let it sit and mellow for a little bit. And, so we cracked it open and we were totally stunned. It tasted nothing like it did, you know, like a week and a half ago, and it tasted nothing like we had thought it was going to taste like. And we were kind of confused, and Jeff looked at me and goes, that's Citra Lager is what that is. And I was like, all right, we got a Citra Lager. Boom. And so we brought it out and we put a label on it and got it out to, we have some friends who own liquor stores and some friends who own bars and they were very gracious in helping us kind of get in front of some people. And I think we produced, you know, a couple hundred cases and they all sold within a week. And we just stunned, right? And that was one of those moments where we were like, we're really onto something here. And so we had to expand our production. And then we got a distributor and it was off to the races. But the Citra Lager was kind of the first wow moment, you know, where things really came together.
So you got the IPA, the Citra Lager, and what's the third one?
The third one tucked up in there is the Black Ale, and that's my favorite. That's the one that was my favorite homebrew recipe and it was the first one that we transferred over into the NA world. That one we're probably going to season out a little bit here as we make a little bit of space on the shelf for some new releases this year. We've got a huge series of new releases coming up, you know, as we kind of open up this book of Wes a little bit here. And for Mother's Day, we're going to have a rosé pils, which has got some red currant and a little bit of hibiscus to it. And, you know, to kind of branch out a little bit from the standard beer drinker and, you know, kind of appeal to that. And then for Father's Day, we're going to release a real tradition American lager, good lawnmower beer.
Yep. Beautiful.
And so that'll be our spring and summer kind of offering coming up here. And then the fall is going to, I'm really excited about our fall openings up right now. They just came off the bench and we just tried them out the other day. And we're busily upscaling them to the big brewery right now. Right. And we have every faith that they're going to be able to reproduce what's there. And we think we have a real game changer here.
I'm sure you've done all your research. I'm just wondering, have you ever had people try the beers side by side with alcohol and non-alcoholic beers and they can't tell the difference?
We have. Actually, we used to, when you could actually get into liquor stores and you could sample them with people, what we would do is we would hold our hand over the part of the label that had the ABV on it and pour it out for them. And we would get, the vast majority of people would say they thought that there was a good, strong amount of alcohol in it because it's such a big, you know, you say NA beer, and like you say, you're used to, you're expecting like a beer flavored seltzer water.
Yeah.
And this is a very different experience. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic to know. No, absolutely. And are the craft beer nerds the ones that are really the hardest to convert? Are they starting to believe? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. We are trying to recreate the craft beer experience from top to bottom. And so eventually we would like to get to the place where there are people standing in line outside of our brewery to get the brand new releases.
How funny would that be? That'd be,
right. Yeah. And so we do listen, you know, we're constantly listening to the, you know, like you say, the craft beer nerd world and everybody else. And we are, you know, we're thinking about ways that we can, you know, we can integrate their thoughts back into our processes as well. They're very passionate about what it is that they've come to love. And, you know, you gotta justify yourself to a certain extent. You know, fortunately, you know, here in the upper Midwest of the United States, this is a very this is a beer culture. You know, I mean, there's a lot of Germans and Norwegians and everything like that. Milwaukee's, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours away, depending on what part you're from. And so people know their beer up here, and you got to stand behind what you're doing.
Yeah. I must admit, you're turning me into a bit of a believer, similar age to you, you know, and obviously understand that, you know, alcohol can get in the way of being a father and those sorts of things all the time. But when I sort of looked into what you were doing, I guess I stopped when I didn't imagine that you would be acting like a full craft brewery. Like, as in what you just said then, you're going to have, you know, your seasonal releases and you're playing with all those cool sort of ingredients and that sort of thing. I guess in my head, I was just thinking, oh, yeah, you're going to have something along the lines of the Heineken 0.0, throw a few hops in and away you go. But you are walking the walk and talking the talk, which is actually bloody exciting, mate.
It is. It's really fun. You know, one of the reasons that the brew pub you were talking about earlier is so appealing to us is because then we could make all of these small batches and really get into doing just crazy stuff, because it's anything that's achievable on the alcohol side is achievable on the non-alcoholic side. And it just takes a little bit more work and a little bit more creativity. And that's really kind of the joy of it.
Just quickly before we go, I was interested to know how it would work with you with the 3-tier distribution system in the USA, whether that affects you because you're zero alcohol. Are you still governed by the same sort of rules there?
We are not. Because we are 0.0, we are governed by the FDA, the Food and Drug Association. So we're essentially a food product. So, you know, Coca-Cola we can go anywhere they go. We can be distributed by anybody that they do. And you can have 13 of us and drive your car home. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the infrastructure is there on the 3-tiered side. And so we do use a beer distributor in most of our markets, and, you know, we do sell in liquor stores, but we don't have to, you know, we don't have quite the same amount of rules that they do.
Ah, fair enough. Because I know in the past when I've spoken to American brewers, the issue around, you know, the region that you can distribute in with the state laws and all that sort of stuff really got in the way of wide distribution. But I think I saw something in the notes when I was researching you about you being available in 40-odd states or something like that. Is that right? Or
we're getting close. I don't think we're quite at 40 yet, but we just we are expanding up the Eastern Seaboard very, very fast. And then we're going to, you know, we started in the Midwest, and so we're right in the middle of everything, and it was kind of easy to chunk out. But there are some national chains like Total Wine and BevMo that do get you nationwide pretty fast. And we're in those, and we're going to get into Walmart. They just picked up their first load about a month ago. And, so those big retail chains do move you out very fast. Everybody realizes that, you know, the NA segment is explosive right now, and people are trying. So it's really great. But, you know, because we have zero alcohol, we've always been able to ship across state lines, which is not necessarily the kid, like you're saying, the 3-tier system.
Yep.
The distributors figured out how to make you have to go through them to get across the line.
Yep.
But we could ship it anywhere. And so we were able to get out nationwide pretty fast.
Oh, well, mate, it's very interesting stuff. As I said, the Australian market's sort of a little bit behind where you currently are, but I would love to see someone doing what you are doing in the Australian market, because I think there is a market for it. Even though I have said I would rather drink a Coke than one of those bland zero alcohol beers, I'm now converted to understand that that is not what you are aiming to do. You are aiming to recreate the full craft beer experience, just minus the alcohol. And I think you might be onto a bit of a winner.
Well, right on, man. Thank you so much. And let me tell you, as soon as they let me leave the country, I will be right down in Australia to get this thing going down there.
Sounds great. Sensational stuff. Where can they find out more about you, the listeners, if they want to know more about Hairless Dog?
You can check out our website at www.drinkhairlessdog.com. We've got there's a specials page there, so you can see what's on sale and what specials we're running. We deliver to the continental United States, so that's a little bit that might be a problem for part of your audience, but you can find all the information you want there. And if you want to drop us a note, we'd love to hear from you, because we are always looking for new markets to go into. And if we can find our way over to Australia, we would certainly love to do that.
Sounds sensational. Well, thanks for your time today, mate, over in the very, very cold Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's been great to chat to you. I think it's really interesting what you're up to, and wish you every success for the future. So thanks for your time.
Well, I appreciate it, Chris. Again, this has been fantastic, and it's just so great to talk to you. And I've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks a lot.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers, mate.
Take care. Be safe.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.